And I really enjoyed our conversation coming back and all the rain. And I kind of felt like I knew her a little bit, even though I'd never met her. She is the Public Information Administrator at the World Service Office in New York. And for the past 3 years, I've been the Public Information Coordinator for our area. So I received correspondence from her on a regular basis, and I did have an opportunity from time to time to correspond back with her on questions. So it was made it kind of really special that I got to meet her, since her name was familiar to me. And she was just really interesting, telling me all the things about the World Service Office that I didn't realize. And she's had a lot of experience in this program and with dealing with conferences and things that we were discussing. And so I'm just real pleased to be the one who gets to introduce her. And so at this time, I would like to introduce Carol Kay from Fishkill, New York.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Carol Kay, and I am from Beacon Fishkill, New York. You have to be careful, I realize, when people pick you up at the airport, what you say in the car. I am the public information administrator at WSO, and that's a God-given gift. The only reason I have that particular job is that I've been in Al-Anon, and I live in New York City, and at the time I needed a job, there was an opening. And actually, the opening was with Alateen, and the reason I was considered was my experience as an Alateen sponsor. For me, I believe it was God's direction, and it was what I was to do. But I'm here today not as an administrator from your WSO, but as an Al-Anon member who wants to share her experience, strength, and hope with you. And I do have hope. I like your theme, courage to change. Before I share a little bit, I do want to thank the committee for inviting me and my husband to come share with you. Some of you have been looking at the young man with the name tag, Jack. And I know you're probably saying, boy, is he young. She really nabbed herself a good one. Before I tell you my whole story, Jack is really John, who is my son. Our family has recently had an emotional upheaval, which we will share with you through our story. And John has come to share his experience, strength, and hope with you in place of his father. Oh, courage to change. I'd like to take you back to a 19-year-old girl who really didn't have any courage. She had a lot of enthusiasm for life, a little bit of rebellion in her home, wanted to do things her way and was busy and wanted to get on with it. Loved to party and loved to laugh and loved life. Didn't like work and didn't like too many responsibilities, and wasn't an A student, one that got by. I always balance that out. It's good to be mediocre, have a little bit of fun, have a little bit of work, but my main theme in life was live, love, and be happy. I met my husband-to-be when I was 19, and I want to tell you, when Jack took a drink, did we have a good time? He was the best one at that party. Our conversations went on and on and on. We danced, he told jokes, and he was everything that I wanted in a husband. Now, I don't even know how I knew what I wanted in a husband, because I really never even thought about that. I have to be honest with you, I did love and like and everything about him, but I think my rebellion was in the way. I liked him more than my mother. And it was a way out. Now, I don't want you to think I'm putting my mother down, because she's a very lovely woman. And through the 12 steps of my program, I've learned to deal with that, too. Jack and I set out to live happily ever after. And, of course, I thought if he was married to me, The drinking that he did, he wouldn't need to do anymore. At least he wouldn't need to do it without me. I really didn't mind that he drank and went to bars. I minded after a while that he didn't take me with him. You see, we were soon to marry and get on with our life, and the next thing I knew, I was to have our first child. Besides not knowing about responsibility, I didn't know about sex education either. So I instantly was pregnant. Here I was, young teenage, actually 19-year-old kid, ready to have a baby who wasn't grown up herself. Susan was born, and I took the responsibility of motherhood to heart. Not only was I going to be a perfect wife, I was going to be a perfect mother. I tried so hard to be perfect for Jack so that he wouldn't drink and he would prefer to be with me. I can't say that he didn't want him to drink. I didn't want him to drink when he wanted to drink. I wanted him to drink when I wanted him to drink. Like a few drinks before we went to a party so he would be delightful. But please stop before the midnight gong, before he turned into that monster. I wanted him to drink at holiday times to bring cheer to the family, and I wanted him to drink when he took me out, especially so we could dance. But I didn't want him to drink without me, and I didn't want him to drink the money away, and I didn't want him to drink and not make the home appointments and parties and things that we had. I didn't want him to drink so that he didn't take interest in Susan and those sort of things, and that's where the conflict started. Jack had a strong desire to drink, and I started to get a very strong desire to control that drinking. I do refer a lot to my husband and eventually to my son and my family, and I do this with their understanding that and approval. You see, I didn't come to Al-Anon because I had a thinking problem. I stayed here because of that. I got here because my husband had a drinking problem and I didn't know how to deal with it, nor did I know how to live with it. So I'm trying to share with you my reaction and response to those early days. I used to try to be perfect for Jack. You know, I would never let him see me unless my hair was just so and my clothes were just so. That perfect woman who had every hair in place eventually went to a woman who weighed close to 300 pounds. She wore a muumuu with no buttons on. I preferred snaps because I was too lazy after a while, or I should say, I didn't care enough to sew them on. I went from that perfect lady who always had a smile on her face to this grease-spotted dress with no more smile but tears. I went to a woman who was full of life, to one who couldn't remember from the bottom step of her home to the top step why she was up there. I went to one who became suspicious and angry and didn't trust. I went from a fun-loving lady who called all of the bars. In the beginning, I called the bars to find out what he was doing and if he would come home. I was trying to control a situation that I didn't know nothing about. I will tell you, after a while, I called those bars because I knew it embarrassed him. I also called the bars because it gave me something to do, but it infuriated me when the bartender said, "He's not here," because I knew he was there. And by that time, as the disease progressed in our family, our children progressed. And I had Susan and I was carrying John, and I couldn't get out because that young girl became very responsible and sometimes over-responsible for her environment. I remember calling the bars and him saying this, and he also used to say he never spent more than 50 cents, and that annoyed me to no end because we had so many debts and I couldn't figure that out. It was through my personal inventory in Al-Anon that I understood why we were heavily in debt, and it isn't due to alcoholism directly. Indirectly, many years ago, someone told me if I kept Jack in debt, he couldn't afford to drink, and I did. I charged and I bought and I shopped and I spent money, and I had charge accounts from New York City to Chicago. In the beginning, I charged to try to control his drinking. After a while, I charged because I was bored. If he didn't come home at night, I would remodel a room through a catalog. After a while, I charged for forgiveness. I charged for acceptance for my children. I charge to buy them every newest fad, every newest outfit, one, two colors, and every toy. I wanted to say to them, I love you and I'm sorry for what went on the night before. But I didn't have the courage the next morning to do that because the shame overwhelmed me. So rather than say I'm sorry that I broke the picture window or that I screamed and yelled or that I had this physical fight with your father, I bought them something new to make it feel better. I wanted the children on the block once to want me to be their parent. And usually on Christmas morning, that wish came true because my children had every toy that was advertised on TV. And Macy's will verify for that. 1 year I went so bad, I got a letter from their credit department, and I only had a limit of like, say, $500, $600, and I had gone up over $1,000. And years ago, that was a lot of money. And I called this number, and this woman said, Mrs. Cooney, don't you think you've gone far enough? I was humiliated, embarrassed. But obviously, I hadn't gone far enough because I still saw the pain in my children's faces. What I was buying was not working. As I said, we were heavily in debt, and Jack continued to drink. And it was only 50 cents, so he didn't take any responsibility for the bets, for the debts. And I really didn't put that much on him. I carried a lot of guilt for it, but I continued to do it. Oh, I'm trying to think of the different things that I did. I'll tell you my favorite story. As the disease of alcoholism progressed in our family, Jack seemed to be having a wonderful time. And I wanted him to suffer. You see, I was suffering. I was suffering terribly inside. I was in such pain. So I decided, I found out that Jack's allergic to Clorox, and he still is. Somebody else did it in this office. I used to rinse his underwear in Clorox. Now, the time that it takes, you talk about your life being unmanageable, I want to tell you, the time that it took for me to air this out and not get caught and everything was unbelievable. But it worked. My husband used to get a rash. He could hardly walk or sit, and he would come into the house, and he would be in such pain, and he'd say, my God, Carol, I don't know what's the matter. And I'd say, yeah, I don't know either. And it wasn't until we came to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon and started to share as a couple that he found out the true problem that he had. If you're new today, I tell you that it does not stop them from drinking. Actually, all it did was encourage him to go up to the corner bar and drink the pain away. But we're not supposed to give any advice in this program, but I will tell you, it gives you a heck of a lot of satisfaction. I have never made amends for this particular act, and I don't plan on it. As the disease of alcoholism progressed in our family, loneliness progressed. And I was so lonely. And there were times that Jack would come home and I'd say, you know, take me with you. But we had children at that time and we couldn't do this. I remember one night he came in. Oh, he didn't come in. And I called the bar and I was carrying John. And I said to the bartender, is Jack there? And he said, no. And I said, well, when he comes in, would you tell him I'm in labor? And they said yes, and about 10, 15 minutes later, Jack come charging through the door, and I said, I knew you were there. I had to prove that I was right, and this is how our life went. There were so many changes in me, and it took no courage. It was desperation and total despair and a need to survive, but not having the tools to survive properly. I needed to be right no matter what the issue was because I was constantly being told I was wrong. I was told that I laughed too much and if I didn't think everything was funny, he wouldn't have to drink. I was told if I kept a cleaner house, he wouldn't have to drink. I was told if I was thinner, I didn't have to drink. I constantly tried to change myself and I was like in a whirlpool that was going down and nothing satisfied. and I talk about progress, I was going downward trying to look for perfection, and it just didn't work. One night, Jack came in, and he had drank up the money as usual, and he said 50 cents, and it went on. And the next night, he was home. I could always tell after a while, I could have a couple nights of peace. Usually when he had too much to drink and he started to get physically ill, or he ran out of money, or he just got tired. And when that happened, that's when I used to move in. And I would do the things that I wanted to do. And I remember this night we had company, and I said, why don't you stay home and relax, honey, and I'll go on down and get the pizza and to entertain these people. And I went to his favorite bar, which still stands in Peekskill. And I went in and I sat at the bar and I said to Sal, Jack got drunk here last night for 50 cents. Sal, I only drink half as much. Here's a quarter, and I'm not leaving till I'm drunk. Sal looked at me like, this is a real Looney Tune. And the rest of the men at the bar were looking at me like we have a case on our hands. And they gave me a drink. Sat there and I laughed and talked, and I loved parties, and I was having a wonderful time, and the phone rang, and it was Jack. And he said to Sal, is Carol here? And I went, I shook my head no and waved at him, and Sal said, no, she's not here. And I found out it has nothing to do with male, female, it just has to do with the bartender won't tell if you're there. And everybody at the bar thought I was hysterical, and they bought me a drink. And each time Jack called, I got a free drink. And I'm here to tell you, I got drunk on a quarter. I was having the time of my life, and I was singing, and I was swinging, and the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was Jack, and he said to Sal, tell her I'm in labor. God has been good to our family, and it has allowed us to look back on many situations such as this and laugh. I must tell you, though, as we were going through them, no one was laughing, and they weren't done in the spirit of humor. They were done in the spirit of anger, revenge, and I'm going to get even. I can remember going and looking for help, and I didn't know. You know, if I went to my parents, they told me things. Well, my father was a little more gentle. He said that Jack was hadn't grown up yet. Boys mature slower than girls, and just keep hanging in there, honey, and he'll outgrow this and go on. My mother's words were a little less spiritual, and I don't care to repeat them. But I would go home to them on Friday, and then I would go back on Sunday. And I have to tell you, I always believed my husband that every Sunday night when he told me he was never going to drink again, I believed him. And that fascinates me after being Al-Anon all this time, how I believed him then. And there's many things today that I still believe him. And it's just very interesting. As his drinking progressed, I went to doctors and lawyers and priests and ministers. I went to anyone that had a Bible in their hand. You see, the childhood God that I understood was a punishing God. And when I was a little girl, I used to love lightning, and I used to sneak out on the porch and I would watch it. And I thought it was a marvelous show that God was putting on just for me. And the thunder would clang and the lightning would shoot across the sky, and my mother would be hiding in the corner of the couch shaking, and my grandmother would be in a closet because this was God's wrath telling the world to shape up. And then my grandmother would remember that this brat is out on the porch, and she'd come and get me by the back of the neck, and she'd say, you're defying God, young lady, and someday you're going to get the consequences of your actions. So I thought this was the consequences of my actions. I'd say, God, I'll never look at another lightning storm. I'll block my ears. Please fix it. Do something. But then it got a little bit more serious than lightning and thunder and a childhood excitement. It got to be my thoughts. My thoughts were murderous. They really were. I couldn't live with Jack, and I couldn't live without him. I didn't believe in divorce in those days, and I really don't believe in divorce today. But I didn't know what else to do. I used to pray that he would die. You say that was the most respectable way out at that time. So my thoughts and my heart were not the way I thought that I should feel as a Christian woman, and I felt shame and a great deal of guilt. So I couldn't go to the ministers and priests with my feelings, but I would go to them with my problems. I thought maybe God would listen to them because he didn't seem to be listening to me. Their answers to me were prayer, which I was a foxhole prayer, like many I've heard before. I used to bargain, God, take care of this, and I'll go to church 6 Sundays in a row. I'll teach Sunday school. I'll do this. I'll do that. And I usually followed through, but after the end of my commitment, then I would slack off again. I went to lawyers, and as I said, I went to doctors. Doctors gave me tranquilizers because they thought that I was very nervous. And I'd say, you don't seem to understand. I'm all right. It's him. He's the one that's not coming home. He's the one that's drinking. He's the one that's doing this, this, and this, and this. And they'd say, but you're reacting to it. And I'd say, well, I'm reacting because he's nervous. But I took the tranquilizers, and I slipped them in Jack's coffee. I had the most tranquil drunk that Peekskill ever saw. Not only did his drinking not bother him, my mouth didn't bother him any longer. You know, he used to say, if you lived with this mouth, you'd have to drink. And I'd say, if you lived with this drunk, you'd have this mouth. And it was that's the kind of vicious cycle. It's not that I didn't look for help. I didn't know where the help was. And actually, in those days, I don't think the professional people that I went to knew where the help was either. They just went to the tools that they knew of. But nobody mentioned AA, and nobody mentioned Al-Anon. One night I was watching television, and there was a panel on. And they talked about the disease of alcoholism. They talked about blackouts. They talked about progression. And I got so excited. My God, that's what's happening in my home. It's true, my husband does have a drinking problem. He does have blackouts. That's why the next morning when he would see me bruised or marked, and he'd say, how did that happen? He really didn't remember when I used to think he was lying and avoiding the situation. I was so excited because for the first time, someone had given me an answer to the reality of what was happening. I couldn't wait for Jack to come home. He had been going on a 3-day bender at that time, and he cautiously came through the front door because my anger erupted in those days with throwing. And I would throw anything that was available. It could be a knife, scissors, lamp. If I could lift it, it went. Only through God's grace and my poor aim did Jack survive those days. Unfortunately, our picture windows and doors didn't, and that only brought embarrassment not only to myself but to our children. But as the years progress, even those things have been fixed. Jack came through the door that night, and I said, it's okay, honey, because he was always slowly coming through. It's kind of like the hat came first, and if that didn't get knocked out of his hand, the rest of them came. I said, we're not going to have a fight. He said, we're not. And I said, no, you're not a drunk. You're an alcoholic. Well, I want to tell you, we had the worst fight you can imagine. They didn't tell me on that show that he didn't want to be an alcoholic. I thought that it was a good thing to be. It was an answer. And we had such a fight, and he said, don't you ever call me that again. I'm a drunk, and that's it, and just get on with it. It was terrible. And the yelling and the screaming that went on in the night, you know, and the children, they used to be up in their room. And I didn't think that I was really affecting them at the time because I gave them so much love and attention and smothered them in the daytime that I thought that I could mend them for what happened that night. I have to tell you, I heard my children, especially John, say, don't answer him, Mama. But I did. I did because there was something driving me inside to get Jack's attention. I realized today that I wasn't doing anything other than saying, love me and not the bottle. Come home to your family. Please be the person that you can be. God has created something inside of you that is being killed, and don't let it die. I had to answer questions at that time. I had to answer my mother and my father, why do you stay, and my brother. And it wasn't until my oldest daughter said, Mama, why do we stay here, that the pain of the reality of my existence started to surface. What happened after I recognized that alcoholism was affecting our family to such a depth, especially me, I was able to stop fighting for about 6 months. I watched my husband, even though he didn't accept the message that was given to me, I watched him. I saw the fear in his face when the phone rang, and I realized that he never talked on the phone, nor did he answer it. I saw the relief and sometimes the dismay as he got up the next morning and looked out the window and realized that his car was there and it was in one piece. I started to listen and hear him say, "I really wanted to come home." And when he said those words, I believed him instead of trying to prove that it was just a bunch of lies, that he would rather drink than be with us. And finally, it was 6 months later, and I said to him, "Jack, we have got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, or I have got to go to a lawyer." Because instinctively, I knew I wasn't fighting, but I had no support system around me. And I was like a volcano, and my emotions were building up till a point I was ready to explode. And even though we've hurt our children deeply emotionally, I knew that one or two more fights, somebody would be hurt physically. Not only were Jack and I physically abusive to each other, but our children after a while would jump in to support, well, usually their mother, but sometimes they weren't sure who was ahead on the fight. I said to him that day, "It's AA or a lawyer," and he took his fist and he put it to my chin and he said, "You and no one else will ever stop me from drinking, so do what you've got to do." And he left the house. And I started to cry that morning, and I knew that I had to leave the man that I didn't want to leave. And I called my lawyer, a lawyer, it wasn't mine, but a lawyer, and I went and I was doing my daily chores, and I was in our son John's room. It's interesting how prevalent John is through this talk, and that he's here today to talk for his father, or for himself, I should say. I went into John's room that morning and I fell on my knees and I prayed to the God of my understanding, "Oh my God, please help this man help himself, whether he go with me or alone." And I wiped the tears and I did what I had to do. Jack came home that day, it was around 3:30, and he said, "Carol, help me." And I said, "I can't help you, Jack, I've tried for years. Besides, what's the big change? This morning you didn't want any help. And now you do." He said, "I don't know, but around 11:30, just before lunch, which happened to be the same time I was on my knees, he said, "Something came in my head and it said, Cooney, what are you doing with your life? Get help." And he said, "Please call Alcoholics Anonymous." And because I was very aware of my husband's fear of phones, I called AA. And they told us there was a meeting in Fishkill on Wednesday night. And this happened to be on a Monday night, I believe, or Tuesday. But Wednesday came. And I drove Jack to his first AA meeting, and he was shaking, and he was red-faced, and I was shaking, and I was red-faced, and he was trembling, and he started to cry, and he said, "I don't know if I can go through with this." And I kept driving and saying, something inside me said, "Don't stop the car, keep going, keep going." And I got to that meeting, and he got out of the car, and he was walking in front of me rather slow, and it just kept saying, "Keep walking, keep walking." And we got to the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was wide open. It was a hot August night, and he stopped in his tracks, and he said, "I'm sorry, Carol, but I can't go through with this." And I said, "That's what you think, Jack Cooney," and I physically shoved my husband through the doors of AA. Now, you can see I'm not a small woman, and when I shove, you get pushed. As he went flying through the doors, God gives us everything we need. There was an AA man who caught him. As he touched that AA person, I heard him say, "Help me." And he surrendered to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know today I could shove Jack and John and anyone that I love dearly through doors of 12-step programs, but the choice of recovery is theirs. And it has nothing to do with me. I was just a tool that God used to get a sick person help. As he turned over his life, I remember saying to that AA person, "Sober him up and I'll do anything." And I meant it for about 2 months. You see, I didn't know what sobriety meant, really. I thought it meant that he would stop drinking, come home, he would be the father that I really wanted him to be, the husband that I thought he should be. You see, I knew what I wanted. I'd been watching soap operas for 12 years. I'd been sitting on the couch. I wasn't a part of life. I was living through somebody else's experiences. Even though they were fantasies, they were a reality to me. And I wanted him to be like Arthur Tate. and I wanted him to be like this one and that one, and it didn't work that way. My husband fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and he went to meetings 7 nights a week, twice on Sunday, for over 10 years. He continues to go to at least 5 meetings a week for the second 10. There was no Al-Anon in the area. There was no one that could understand where I was, and I didn't understand where I was. I would go to the meetings with him, and I was very grateful and happy that he was sober, no matter what went on in our home during the day. And I will tell you, we did not have instant serenity. At night, we could lay our head on the pillow, and we could all get a good night's sleep, and that was a miracle in our home. That's probably the first miracle that hit the Cooney family, was a good night's sleep. We didn't get instant serenity because we had been so deeply affected our attitude. They had changed. This fun-loving gal was no more fun-loving, and she was very hurt and resentful and bitter, and I didn't trust. And I was lonely. I was so lonely. I could be sitting in a room full of people like this and be so lonely. I would go to my meetings and I would say to them, I'm lonely, and there was no Al-Anon, and they'd say, you have no gratitude in your attitude, thank God he's sober, and just get on with it. Well, I didn't know, and I would go home and I'd lay my head on the pillow and I would kind of cry myself to sleep, and I'd say, God, I really am grateful. I don't mean to have an attitude of ungratitude, but I'm lonely. He's never here. So I decided to make the best of when he was there. And Saturday mornings when he was there, I was so uptight and frustrated, and so was he, because he didn't know how to be a part of a family. We had made our own little circle, and we had this house guest who now wanted to become a part of that circle. And there was a great deal of resistance to that. He had opinions which we didn't ask for, you know, before, and his program was strengthening him enough to tell us. He had slogans. He didn't get into the steps right away. He had slogans that gave him answers to me. You know, and I would say something and he'd say, live and let live. Well, what's that mean? I'd like to make a plan for the family. I'd like to figure out something. I'd like to come up with a decision. Who am I supposed to let? You live and leave me alone? What's easy does it? Easy does it, Carol. My God, Jack, we're not doing nothing. First things first. When do I come first, Jack? Well, first I have to go to my meetings. AA comes first, sobriety comes next, and then I have to talk to my sponsor, and then I have a pigeon, and I have to do this, and I have to do that. And you don't understand, Carol, because you're not an alcoholic. Oh, dear God, I want to be an alcoholic. I want to understand. Okay, Jack, I'll be one. He said, don't try it. I'm not putting up with you. We had our fights on Saturday morning because we fought every Saturday morning for years. We fought over money, we fought over kids, we fought over everything. Just because he stopped drinking, the bills didn't get paid like this. All of a sudden, we couldn't borrow from Peter to pay Paul because this is an honest program. We had to say we don't have the money. And it all started coming tumbling down. And it got frightening. And we would have these fights, and he would say, I can't deal with this now. And I'd be like this, and I'd say, well, what are you going to do? He'd say, I'll be right back. He'd leave, and he'd come with his sponsor. And his sponsor would stand there and say, we don't get any more than we can handle. I said, oh, dear God, this man doesn't have my bills. How does he know what I can handle? It was only a matter of a month or two later, and this person came in our life called the pigeon. And Saturday morning, his wife didn't put up with him. He was living up the street in one room. Every Saturday morning, I had the three of them telling me, you don't get any more than you can handle, and AA comes first. We would be sitting at the table after dinner, trying to communicate. My middle daughter, when she used to speak to with us, used to call this stark raving sobriety. We would start on a subject on a very low key. I'd like to tell you about this little problem we have. Okay, I'm ready for it. And the teeth we would grit, and then we would be using words that were not nice. I'd have to say the kids leave the room. Our voices would raise. They might just as well have stayed in the room because you could hear us up the block. And we would be ready to kill each other, and the phone would ring, and it would be Alcoholics Anonymous, and my husband would say, "Hello." I would run up on the extension, and I'd pick up the phone, and I'd say, "If you think he's serene, you're as crazy as he is." We had no problem with the second step. When they said, "Restore us to sanity," I had no problem. I knew my actions were insane. I knew I had gotten to a point of emotional illness. I just didn't know where to go to get well. One night, Jack was getting ready to go to a meeting, and I begged him. I so desperately needed him to just hold me and listen to me and talk to me. Not about problems, but just about us. Just let me know that you care. Just let me know that I'm lovable. I don't feel lovable inside. I don't feel a part of anything. I just feel so desperate trying to hold it all together. And because I held it together with control issues, do this or I'll do this, everybody thought I was strong, and on the outside I projected strength, and inside I was just a trembling individual that so desperately needed something other than herself. He said, "I'd like to support you and do what you ask, Carol, but I have got to go to meetings. I have got to go to my meeting." And he went and took a shower, and I ripped up his shirts so he couldn't get to those meetings. It's not the first time I'd ripped up his shirts. I ripped him up so he couldn't get to bars. And now he was ripping them up because he was going to meetings. See, I hadn't had an attitude change, and it had nothing to do with courage. I didn't understand, and I didn't know. He came down and he picked up those shirts and he said, "Now I have evidence you're crazy, and I am taking them to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are going to put you away." And I believed him, because I knew that I had an illness. I knew that I had been deeply affected, and I knew the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really believed that you were coming to put me away. And I decided, you can come, but you're going to have one heck of a fight on your hands to get me out of that house. I got myself a 2x4, and I sat in my living room waiting for Jack and that sponsor and his pigeon. And only through God's grace or wisdom, they didn't come. They came the next morning when Carol had calmed down and the fear wasn't so bad. And they said, "Carol, we've heard this about this thing called Al-Anon. Will you go?" And I said, "I will go any place." And they took me to my first meeting. It was 60 miles from Fishkill. And they took me to that door. And they didn't shove me through like I got shoved, but they did give me a gentle push. And I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous had to take a first step with me. And they said that this lady, we're powerless over this lady, and until we get her help, she's going to make our lives unmanageable. It's a very upsetting spot to be when you're the only emotionally disturbed or obvious emotionally disturbed person in the Hudson Valley. They took me to my first Al-Anon meeting, and they kind of gently helped me through the door. And I went in, and there was a group of women sitting around, and they did their opening, and they smiled at me, and I felt a little relaxed and at ease. And they said, "You're a newcomer today. Do you have something that you would like to share with us? Do you have a problem?" And I said, "No, I have no problems." I said, "I'm just here because he drinks, and he's in the other room, and I'm fine." And they said, "Patience." And I said, "Excuse me, I have no patience. I have no patience with this sobriety. I don't understand it. I don't know where I fit in. I don't know why I'm reacting. I don't know why I'm feeling lonely and such despair. I don't know why I'm not happy. I prayed for this for years and I've got it and it's not what I thought it would be. I'm still alone." They proceeded to share their experience, strength, and hope with me, and I identified. They also did take a mini inventory of myself, and thank God for that today. They told me I had a martyr complex. I didn't even know that. They told me I was acting like a mother, and I had too much control. They told me to get off his back and let him work his program. They told me I had a program of my own, and they would walk with me, but they couldn't do it for me. And that they understood where I was at, and that one day at a time, I too could get well. Thank God they gave me the direction they did, and it only came through their experiences. I walked out of the meeting that day, and my three friends were standing there, and they said, "Well?" And I said, "It was pretty good." And I found out I have my problems and you have yours. And I have my program and you have yours. And if you don't mind, I'm going to get on with mine. I have gotten on with my program, and thank God for that. I have accepted the first step that I'm powerless. And the minute I try to get in there and direct and control and force solutions, my life becomes unmanageable, whether it be due to active alcoholism or in sobriety. As I told you, to admit that I was insane, it was obvious. It was not so easy until I got in the closed rooms of Al-Anon that I could verbalize it to others. And the power greater than myself was not that God of my childhood understanding, because I really didn't want any more punishment. It was the members of my Al-Anon meeting. I turned it over to them. I came to believe in them and what they had to say to me. I came to believe in my sponsor when she told me to clean one drawer because I didn't have the ability to clean a whole room. When she walked through it with me on the phone, and then she would say the next day, finish the dresser, Carol, and then try your closet, Carol. And it was with her that she walked through, and Al-Anon friends that took me to help me buy clothes because I had gotten to a point of such despair that I wasn't interested in them anymore. I always made sure that my earrings and shoes matched, but I really didn't care what went on in between. It was the Al-Anon members that gave me the love of me that I didn't have for myself. They told me that I could do it and that they would support me, and I started to change. I don't believe at the time that I took much courage, because I had so much despair that I didn't know anything else to do. I knew on my own I was being destroyed. So if they told me to go to meetings, I went to meetings. If they told me to use the phone, I used the phone. If they handed me a piece of literature, I read it. And I started to change gradually. I did a four-step inventory of myself as the years progressed. It took me a while. In the beginning, I didn't want to face my inventory because I had not only been told, but I believed that I was so bad. So to inventory myself in writing, I was not ready for that. But we have a pamphlet in I think it's Alcoholism, the Family Disease. There's a listing of do's and don'ts. And I was able to identify with that small list, and I call that my first step. I was all of the don'ts, and I would put that on my refrigerator and try to be a doer. And at the time, my children were little, and there was a TV show with a doobie, so I tried to be a doobie too, and I tried to do be good and stop nagging and try to do these things. Then they gave me a pamphlet, Just for Today. Just for today, I'll be as happy as I can possibly be. Just for today, I won't let you know my feelings or hurt. Just for today, I'll do two things that I don't want to do. And I started to change. And my family started to change. And Alateen came in our program, and our children started to change. I turned my will and my life over to care of God of my understanding only after I did my four-step inventory. I had been so deeply ingrained in my family that I had no life or will of my own. If they were a success, I was a success, and if they failed, I felt like a failure. So I didn't know what to turn over to the God of my understanding, and I had to take a written inventory. And in my inventory, I can only tell you that I had to deal with issues as the wife, as the mother, as the daughter, and on down, and I got to... After I got through all of those issues, I got down to who I was. I stripped myself in my inventory, and I could no longer hide behind Jack or my children or my mom. And I had to find out who Carol is and what makes her tick. Part of my inventory was, I will tell you, that my mother is a wonderful, gracious lady. She was just 84 years old. She's a lady of strong determination, and at the age of 70 got herself her driver's license and surprised me and drove up to my house and beeped the car horn. At that time, she lived about 18 miles away, and I like to have dropped on the floor. And she is the strength that my mother has shown. She also was a strong lady that often could take over my personality and direct me to do what she wanted to do and not necessarily what I wanted. I always felt I couldn't quite measure up, and it wasn't in till Al-Anon that I didn't no longer have to measure up. I learned in Al-Anon to be my own person and to accept my mother as her person. And in my inventory, my mother came out as a china cup. I like to use visuals, they help me to understand. And a china cup is a beautiful thing to be, and she's a beautiful person to be. And I'm so grateful that I have her in my life. And in my inventory, I became a mug. Now, people often get upset when I say that I'm a mug, and that's not putting me down. A mug is a person that's in everyday activity. She's active or he's active, and they're involved, and they're useful, and they're just strong, sturdy people that have to get on with life and have to be a part of life, try to be a china cup. That's when the confusion comes in my life. And I have learned through Al-Anon to accept who I am and be who I am and accept those that I love dearly as who they are and that try to let them be who they are. My inventory has helped me to see that all my rebellion and all of my anger and all of my carrying on was not that of a spoiled child trying to get her own way or of a controlling woman trying to direct her family her way, but it was of a desperate woman trying to survive and trying to get love. It came all down to, please, just love me. Part of my program and my spiritual awakening has to do with the fourth step in loving me. I remember being in a convention such as this, and I heard a woman speak, and she told of her inner feelings. She told of her inner rejection of self. She told of her fears. She told of how she felt when she saw her first child drugged. I started to identify. She told of her anger and how she felt when she saw her child's eyes dazed due to drugs. And I, too, felt that the first time I saw my son's eyes dazed. I, too, wanted to beat on him, and I, too, wanted to beat some sense into his head. And I felt guilt and shame because I watched his father put his arms around him and offer him a program. When in my despair, I found out in my inventory when I'm fearful, I come out in anger. I feel that's a stronger thing for you to see. Today I've learned to let you know that I have fears. But I remember that day that John came in and I was so fearful for his life. And I must tell you, selfishly, for my life, because I no longer wanted to have the pain of watching someone I love destroy themselves. Inwardly, I wanted to beat on him and I wanted to say, oh my God, John, didn't you see what your parents did to themselves? And don't do it to yourselves. And I had to get on with it, but I carried the guilt, and I didn't take that to my Al-Anon group. And as this lady shared, she shared that feeling. And she shared other feelings, and I identified, and thank God for the spirit of identification in this program. Because as she talked, I started to cry. And as I started to cry, the tears started to wash out the negative in my insides. My soul started to be cleansed. And I cried and I cried for about an hour and a half. And then I cried out to that God of my understanding that I only began to talk to through my experiences with Al-Anon. And I said, my God, won't somebody accept me for who I am? Please, God, help me to get the peace and the understanding inside out. And with that, a peace came over me. And I know the God of my understanding said, I love you, Carol. And Carol loved Carol. And I accepted myself from that moment. So it says to take a deep and fearless moral inventory, and after that experience, I knew that the God of my understanding loved me. And because I had faith in myself, once again, I could turn my life and my family over to that God of my understanding. I had to tell my God, and I had to face up to my own defects of character, and I had to tell my sponsor what was happening. There's a part of our life that I didn't tell people because I was ashamed. It isn't all nice and it isn't all funny. And some of it only through God's grace. And as Annie said last night, we didn't get caught is the reason I didn't get put into an institution. I hid that. There were parts of our life that I didn't want anybody to know. And I hope today that even our children don't know the extreme and the extent of the violence that could go on in that family. I told, and after 5 years in this program, it started to fester, and I tell you today, if you're holding something, if you can't talk to someone in this program, get to someone and get it out, because it will fester. And that festering started to surface, and distrust and disbelief in me and my spouse started to surface once again. And I had to take a dear Al-Anon friend and give it to her. And through her caring enough to listen to this burden, I was cleansed once again and ready to get on with my life. I'm learning again the defects of character. You know, I thought if I took the 6 step, they'd just go away, and many of them have gone away. I'm no longer a violent woman, and I'm no longer full of anger. I do get angry, but I don't believe that I'm as angry as I used to be. I do feel that I have replaced a lot of mistrust and control with love and caring and understanding. I do believe that I've been able to listen and not direct anymore. And I do believe I'm able to let those around me have a direction that's not necessarily my direction, even though their direction may be painful. I have to tell you about John's drinking and how the 12 steps gave me a foundation to get on with my life. Because I was active in Al-Anon and I had applied this program to my particular life, I was able to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that there was nothing else that I could do. But I also have to tell you that first step does not take the pain that was inside of watching another person destroy themselves. But my life did not become unmanageable. I was not sitting and wallowing like I did with his father in despair, because I had direction and I had something to support me at that time. I had 12 steps. Some days, most days, I would start with the first. And then I would go to the third, and I would turn him over to the God of my understanding. And then if I was dwelling too much on something, I would go to the sixth and the seventh. But most of all, the 11th step is what kept me sane. I remember the night before he turned himself over to our program, turned his life and his will over. He was in our living room, and there was anger, and there was a lot of times despair, because you see, our programs told us not to fix DWIs. Our program told us not to fix anything from the past, but to support with the future. And so when we were confronted with different issues and had to say no, he may not have verbalized his anger, but it was obvious in his eyes. And this one night, I came home from an Alateen convention, and I was very tired, but I was grateful for the space that I was in. You see, Alateen, I went there, and they tell you the way it is, up front, instantly, nothing camouflaging it, and that's where I learned to openly love. And they pulled down my mature walls that were built over the years. They're the ones that helped me to reach out and touch and to say I care and I love. They're the ones that helped me to say to you, I'm in pain today and I need help. So coming from this Alateen convention, I was strengthened. And when I came in, our son was in the living room and he stood there, and I don't know what the concern was at the moment, but his eyes saw anger. I always check my children's eyes because I do believe it's the mirror to their soul. And I do get suspicious when sunglasses go on, because at one time, he particularly wore sunglasses a lot. And I think it was not too long ago he had sunglasses on. And I say, you have a problem with your eyes, John. It's summertime, Mother. Oh, okay. This night I looked in his eyes, and they were not happy eyes. They were angry eyes, and there was despair and fear. You see, the reality of the disease is that it's fatal, it's a killer, and if people don't get help, not everybody is going to have the gift of sobriety, and that reality set in. And when he left the house that night, I said, John, remember, wherever you go or whatever you do, your mother and father love you very much. And he said, I know that, and he left. And it's through the pain, when the pain of life is more than I can bear. I can't even share that with you. I retreat to the 11th step. I retreat to the God of my understanding, and I seek through prayer and meditation to get a conscious contact with that God, praying for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. And when that word power means that it's not always going to be what Carol wants. So I need something other than me. I went into this meditation and I went into myself asking for God's help. And Jack said, Carol, you've got to talk to someone about this. I said, I can't. The pain is too much for me. I went to work that morning and I was still quiet and withdrawn and into myself in prayer and meditation. And the phone rang. And it was my husband. And he said, I just wanted you to know that your son has asked to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to cry and sob, and they ran into my office, and they thought that something had happened to Jack. You know, it's funny, when we cry, to such a depth that people think of death when I was actually crying tears for life. And I tried to get out, miracle, and you try, so you said, and it couldn't come out, and they kept saying, Jack, is Jack all right? The kids, are they all right? And then it said, miracle, John. I didn't know, even though I had experienced so many miracles in our family, that God would give us another miracle. And he has given us many, many miracles of sobriety. I have enjoyed watching my son's sobriety because I have learned it's none of my business and I don't have to fix it. As we've gone on in our program of recovery, my husband was also stricken with another disease of arthritis, and at the age of 45, I was forced out into the field. I never wanted to be a professional woman. I really never wanted to work, and it was not due to laziness. It was due to I like being a home person. I love my home. I love my children. I love my husband, and that's where I chose to be. I don't know why. This is where the 11th step, the power to carry out. I don't know why God asked me to do this. And you want to talk about courage, now is when I'll talk about courage. Because it took courage and the support of this program for me to go into New York City. We live in a small town up the Hudson Valley that when I go to the train in the morning, I pass the cows grazing or sleeping. They're not awake when I go by in the morning. They're just laying around there. And the next thing I know, 2 hours later, I'm on 42nd Street. And I used to have a culture shock every morning. I'd say, what am I doing here, God? I think you're mixed up. And then things going on in New York City that never go on in Fishkill, and I was frightened. And I used to buy a newspaper and put it under my arm, and I'd walk down Park Avenue like I belonged, because I figured if I felt it, they wouldn't know it. And in time, the feelings did become a reality, and I am comfortable in, cautious, but comfortable in New York City. Our life changed drastically as my husband had to readjust. He was a construction worker who had been affected in his hands and feet and different parts of his body. And he had to change, and he had to stay home. And there were changes that I don't believe we ever dealt with. We used our humor to surface over it, and we got on with it one day at a time. My job is one that keeps you busy and keeps you traveling, and it takes you away from home. And even though we were both active in our programs, I do believe that we got busy. And as Lois at OE said, she really thought, her and Bill thought the two programs should go like this, with the ties connecting, but not like this. But I think we went like this. As a couple, we have dealt with many issues in our lives. We dealt with our son's alcoholism. At a young age, a teenager, he started, and how does a teenager prove that they're not an alcoholic by drinking? And that's John's story, which he'll tell you Sunday. But we dealt with that, not always on our knees, not always with calm, not always with peace, sometimes riding together at 2 o'clock in the mornings through neighboring towns, trying to get tired enough to sleep. We dealt with our oldest daughter, who was stricken with arthritis also, and at the age of 19 was a total invalid. And we dealt with her, and we watched her progress through her belief in a power greater than herself that came only through our knowledge that we learned in this program. And was she able to accept a spiritual healing that came through God speaking to her mother that Susan would be healed inside out? And Susan is totally healed from arthritis. And this is not just today. This was many, many years ago. She has two sons, works full time, rides motorcycles, and she's busy with her life. And she's probably our most active and productive member. Exhausting. Not that we're not productive, but this one is hyper. Who can keep up with her? But she's doing her thing. Sometimes she's not always doing the things that her mother would want her to do, but she's doing the things that she has to do. Is that nice? I have two grandsons that I adore, and they are the light of my life. And they do come to our meetings, and they do understand, because they have to understand that this is a part of their medical history. My middle daughter, I have to tell you that she was the overachiever. She's the one that never gave us a problem. She's the one that never complained or carried on. She has a great sense of humor, and she'd give you a punch on the shoulder and say, "Hey, Mom, hey, Dad, how you doing?" And it was through Alateen that I learned, and I realized that she never hugged, touched, or kissed, other than a punch and humor. It was through the Alateen's sharing that they said, sometimes we have to reach out when the other person isn't able to. And I started to reach out and hug and touch her. It was through the Alateen experience that her brother and her, after many years, were able to say that they loved each other. Karen started to change through her Alateen program, and Karen is probably the best hugger we have in our family today. She's a chiropractor, and she has gone into the field of chiropractic in a desire to help her father's disability, was the original, but also a need to help people and to share what she has been given. We have an AA baby, Carol Ann, who is 21 and was just married and has a good life. I will tell you the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Alateen have brought recovery to our family. Today our family is going through another upheaval. I'm going to try and share a little bit of this with you before I close. It's not far enough away from me to make it funny, nor is it far enough away from me not to have knots in my stomach and feel a great deal of inner sadness. Because of circumstances, and I will tell you, up until last night I thought I was abandoned, but due to Annie's, I realized today that it has nothing to do with abandonment. It has to do with each one of us must go our own direction. About 2.5 years ago, there was a change of attitudes in our home. Up till that point, my husband was, I remember introducing him as my lover, my confidant, my sparring partner, and my best friend. And communication, it may have been happening all alone, but it wasn't until 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago that I realized that things weren't the way that I thought they should be. I remember getting off the plane from one of my business trips and sitting in the parking lot with my husband and saying, "Don't start the engine, Jack, just hold me, because I want to tell you how much I love you." I felt on that plane trip that maybe in my busyness I was taking him for granted and I wasn't sharing enough of where I was at or asking enough about where he was at. He held me and we talked, but there was an uncomfortableness in his body language. It took him about 2 days, and then he told me that he was fighting a drink that morning, but that he was all right. My husband has a wonderful attitude of being all right instantly. But it wasn't all right. We progressed in another direction, and it was not necessarily recovery. Things weren't right again, and I found myself on a merry-go-round. If I get thin, he'll love me. I got too thin, and he said, "If you were 30 pounds heavier, you'd be better." I put 30 pounds on. That's no better. If I did this, if I did that. And it's funny how we revert right back. I inventoried myself inside out, upside down. We went for marriage counseling, and we worked hard, and he worked hard, and it just couldn't get fixed for some reason. And I don't know why, and he doesn't know why. I truly believe that my husband loves me, and I love my husband. But for some reason, we're not happy with each other. We went on a merry-go-round back and forth, an emotional merry-go-round of wanting to leave but afraid to stay, and afraid to leave but wanting to stay, and it went on and on and on. When we got the invitation to come here, we thought it was a message from God. He really wanted us to pull together and come and share with you our experience, strength, and hope. Maybe it was a message from God. Maybe it wasn't for Jack and I to share our experience with you, but maybe for John and I. I don't know. I don't question that anymore. I just know that I'm grateful that I'm here today. 1 month ago, I believe it's probably today, I came home from work and there was a bed and dresser missing with a note that Jack had to leave. I haven't seen or heard from him in a month. I know he's all right. It takes courage. It takes courage to accept. There's a missing and there's a caring and there's a wanting. My program has told me that I don't have to camouflage anymore. I don't have to smile to you and tell you that it's okay, that I can let go.
It's not okay, and in the quiet of my room, there's many tears that are shed. It's sad. It's sad because we've come through so much, and we've accomplished so much, and we really have got it all. But we lost it all, and I don't know how. This is a man that goes to meetings. He goes to meetings 5 nights a week, as I said. And this is a woman who goes to her program. Not 5 nights a week. I don't have that kind of stamina. And I don't know why we haven't pulled it together for today. But I have to believe, as Annie said last night, we each must go our own direction for now. And maybe if the bond is strong enough, we will come back. Not necessarily as husband and wife, but I pray as best friends. And that prayer of that young woman 25 years ago who fell on her knees and said, God, help this man, whether he go with me or alone, is saying the same prayer. Please, dear God, help Jack find himself. Help him get the peace that he deserves, because he does deserve it. He's a kind, warm, loving person. And I, as I said, I don't understand why we're at this spot or how long we're going to have to stay here. My problem is dealing with finality, that you know, I keep expecting each day he's going to come to the door. And when he doesn't come to the door, I have to say, maybe you're in a state of denial. So I take it one day at a time. It takes courage. It takes courage. It doesn't take courage to get up in the morning because I have a busy day. It takes a great deal of courage to come home at night. But it's working, and it's okay. And God does give us what we can handle, and I am handling it through the support of loving children, support of Al-Anon members, my mom, and the people around me. I've shared with you the miracle of my daughter Susan, the miracle of John and his sobriety, the miracle of Karen and her achievement as a chiropractor, because you know when she wanted to become a chiropractor, it's very costly and we had no money. And we just took it one semester at a time, and through God's grace and her determination, she made it. And I talked to the miracle of Carol. Carol is such a wonderful young adult who understands what our program is all about, and each one of them periodically comes in and out. The Al-Anons don't stay as much as, thank God, the AAs do. I shared with you all of those miracles, but I share with you today the greatest miracle in my life, and that's me and my recovery. You see, I truly know today, especially from this last experience, Jack could have achieved sobriety, John could have achieved sobriety, Susan could have walked again like she did, and each one would have picked up their miracle and walked away. And without help, without the Al-Anon program, I also believe that I would have been in a mental institution and possibly not being a part of their life. So it does take courage, but there's a great deal of satisfaction to know that I don't have to walk it alone. I'd like to thank you again for having me, and I'd like to close as I usually close. Instead of hiding in the shadow of alcoholism in fear, Al-Anon has given me a program that has given me the courage to stand tall and cast a shadow of my own. Alcoholics Anonymous has given Jack the same kind of a program. And I pray, and I think it took a great deal of courage for him to move out. When I get beyond my personal hurt, I, for one, do not have that courage. And I could not leave him for that length of time, even though I have gone on the merry-go-round of leaving and coming back. So I believe that it took courage for him to do what he had to do. And he believes for him he's doing what's best. AA has given our son John the courage to accept his addiction and to stand tall and cast a shadow of his own. Susan and Karen and Carol, each of the Alateen and Al-Anon program, have been given the courage to stand and cast shadows of their own. And as each member of our family has applied their individual programs to their lives, we've been able to blend those shadows, and we are a grateful and a recovering AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen family. Thank you.